And where are we going?
Welcome, friends, regular and new listeners, to the program. This is Red Ice Creations Radio. My name is Henrik Palmgren, and we are recording from Sweden, up in Scandinavia. And we are here with a new program every Thursday and Sunday. But you can, of course, tune into our radio shows anytime. Our archive is up there for you 24/7. Going back to our start over a year ago, and if you want to have full access to be able to tune into our subscriber interviews, all information on how you can sign up and come aboard is available on our website, redicecreations.com. And today we have AJ Bruno from oneheartbooks.com back with us on the program for our part two on mind control, EMF weaponry, and related book tips on this topic of mind control. And before we bring AJ on, I want to mention his website again, of course, oneheartbooks.com. Take a look around over there, and we'll be talking more about some of the books on mind control that he has available on oneheartbooks. So let's bring AJ back on. Thank you for coming on, AJ. It's great to have you back.
Thank you, Henrik. It's good to be here.
Excellent. Great to have you. If there's anyone out there that missed our part one with AJ, you can just, as I said, head into our archive and you'll be able to catch that first part from there. And last time we did talk about AJ's experiences with EMF weaponry, and before we move towards talking about a few books on this subject, I would like to backtrack on a few notes and pop a few more questions to AJ about his experiences. And we did talk, you know, that you were exposed a number of times to this, you know, the experimentation or what it was, you know, the attempt to potentially, I guess, even, you know, turn you into a Manchurian candidate here, who knows, but you managed to pull away from it, or you know, you weren't drawn into it, as it were, and you were able to you know, not go in the direction that these controllers would want you to go, I guess. And there are a few points that we talked about last time that was, you know, very interesting that keeps, you know, returning to me and coming back. And one thing I would like to ask you here right up front is, you were exposed a number of times, I guess, to this, but were there, you know, similarities between the events or between these experimentations? I guess my question is, did it feel the same every time? And if it did, were there kind of any pain involved, headache, or were this directed towards your entire body, so to speak?
Yeah, there definitely was a, you know, similarities between each thing. It did feel the same each time. There was a sort of headache that I would have throughout. It was usually in the frontal lobes. And it would start out that there would be this kind of like getting the ball rolling, so to speak. The first couple of times it started, there were these pops that would happen in my mind, like actually in my brain, this pop would happen. And then they would find something to get me hooked on, get me in a state of fear, and then slowly, you know, roll that ball and get me into this pretty much state of fear that would play on my fears.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the pattern each time throughout the six times that it did happen, these intense blasts that I got.
Yeah.
Later on, it was the last couple times it happened, it was almost as if I got hit with some kind of pulse wave and that the bottom dropped out on me. That's, you know, I guess the best way I can explain it.
Wow, okay. So, and these...
The last two times it happened, which was in 2002 and 2000, when, you know, right around New Year's time.
Mm-hmm. So these, you mentioned that you got some headache, and of course that you, the fear that you felt, was this something that, you know, was it like something, a vision playing up in your mind, or was it just a... you know, your own mental state that was going haywire, you couldn't control your thoughts, or what was it like?
Well, with the voices, it was as if they found something getting killed or hurt or something like that. You know, in the beginning, they used my ex-girlfriend, who I was still friends with at the time. They used her against me and things about her getting hurt.
Hmm.
So a lot of it was these, you know, these voices that were, you know, saying, we're going to come in and get you at the house. And so I would sit up all night a lot of the times.
Yeah.
You know, that would keep me up.
Sheesh. So it was trouble sleeping and trouble, you know, did you have like, did you work during the time or studied or and if so, did it kind of upset your normal, you know, patterns, as it were, for living a normal life?
Oh, yeah. Once it started, if I was working a job at the time, I ended up, you know, losing the job, you know, pretty much because I told them something's going on and I can't come into work now.
Yeah. Yeah.
Didn't want to eat. Things like that.
Sheesh. So, I mean, there are a few cases going back now where the government admits that they were involved in, you know, MK Ultra experimentation on subjects. There was one lady from Canada, I think, that actually got money. I don't know if she sued the U.S. government or CIA in this case. I can't remember exactly how this came about, but I know that she got some money because she was a victim of this MK Ultra experimentation. Do you think that what you experienced were part of some kind of program that was run, you know, by an institution or by a government, or do you think that this could be a rogue thing? Because you mentioned your, you know, your strange neighbor we talked about last time. Any ideas about that? Who it might be?
Well, I personally feel it's the government, the military behind this. They're field testing these weapons. I mean, there's certainly the possibility that there are rogue elements that could have these weapons in their hands, but I think ultimately they're tied in somehow, either through a, you know, secret society, a cult, or something of that nature. You know, somehow they're getting their hands on these weapons, and the people who are making them are the military-industrial complex, the Air Force. You know, they're the ones doing the research and study on these types of things.
Yeah, that's right.
You know, certainly universities are involved. I'm sure they're definitely using certain universities. One of the Nazi scientists who were brought over here on Operation Paperclip, and his name was Hermann P. Schwan. You know, he was involved down here at the University of Pennsylvania, or University of Penn, which is right down the road here in Philadelphia.
Mm-hmm.
And Harlan Garrard even mentions him because, you know, he believes that he's another victim who lives in Philadelphia, and you know, he believes that Hermann Schwan had something to do with this, with his whole victimization of being hit with these weapons.
Mm-hmm.
It was Hermann Schwan who also, I think, contributed a lot of the research into the radio frequency dosimetry handbook.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And that was a book that has all the radio frequency dosages of what could be used to get certain kinds of effects from these weapons. You know, the whole body has been mapped out as far as the organs, and I'm sure they got it mapped out down to a cellular level.
Hmm. So they could, I guess, even trigger other areas of the body and maybe induce, I don't know, diseases in other areas of the body, maybe?
Yeah, no doubt about it. They could, you know, make you go to the bathroom, affect your heart. I mean, I think they, you know, they call them non-lethal weapons. You know, I guess that's their little cover story, but, I mean, these things can be very lethal. They could cause heart attacks. You know, it can cause other organs to fail.
Sure.
Yeah.
So this, I want to return and talk a little bit more, I guess, about your neighbor. You mentioned that you met him once Was that the only time you met him and talked with him, or did he pop up now and then in your, you know, you met him while you were, you know, around your house or so forth, and did he you know, have a family, or you know, was he this strange lone guy just moving in around the time when your experiences began?
Yeah, he, if I remember correctly, he either moved in before, I'm not quite sure, he either moved in before the first time this happened or after the second, but if I remember correctly, I think he moved in before it all started. And, yeah, he had a wife, and she was much younger than him.
Mm-hmm.
He must have been in his 50s, and I think she was like 28. And they had a son together, and he, I mean, you see children sometimes, and they're a reflection of their parents, and he was a pretty strange kid, not to judge him at all, but,
Yeah.
yeah. You know, once in a while I would see him outside, talk to him, whatever. But I just thought it was strange when, you know, I said what I said to my parents when they saw it. Yeah, it was when it first started, because it was the first time when I had that intuition telling me that the government was behind it. And it's just strange that he would come out, you know, and see me out back and just right off the bat, you know, start telling me that, you know, these, you know, the government's not behind this. It's not like he just came up and said, "How you doing?" and, you know, "What's going on?" He dived right into saying, you know, "The government's not behind this, and this is what Sirhan Sirhan was saying." And,
Yeah.
you know, some of these other people. It was just strange that he mentioned this, because at the time I didn't really know much, you know, about this history.
Do you think that your parents might have talked to him about this, and for some reason he thought that he could, you know, help you because he might think that you have, you know, problems that you, okay, this kid is paranoid, you know, or whatever. I want to help him out. Do you think that that could be the case here?
Quite possible, but, you know, later he tells me one time that, you know, his dad worked on the Manhattan Project, which makes me think that, you know, it's quite possible that he's tied into something here.
Yeah.
Because eventually he moved out of this area, and I guess magically, I don't know, maybe, yeah, I don't know, maybe somehow he had some kind of connections or. But he ended up getting a job right off the bat in a prison down in Tennessee.
Right.
You know, and they, you know, they use this stuff. They test this stuff on prisoners. You know, they use mental hospitals and things like that to run their tests as well. You know, that was the case with Ewan Cameron, which I think what might have been you were mentioned before, where he, you know, was doing a lot of that research for the CIA involved in the whole MK Ultra project up in Canada, where he pretty much wiped that one woman's mind clean.
Oh, really? Was this
Yeah, he was doing depatterning and then reprogramming them. You know, and all that was going on in a mental hospital up in Canada.
Okay. Sheesh. Yeah,
And that
so
guy, Dr. Ewan Cameron, later, I think, goes on to be the president of the American Psychiatric Association.
Okay, yeah, there we go. Yeah, he's got the background knowledge on how to, oh, sheesh, my God, yeah, to create those clones. Again, we're back to that kind of Manchurian Candidate type of person. Do you know if
Right.
you know, do you know if there are any other I guess documented in this case similar people, you know, persons that have had a similar experience that you have had, that have written about it or came out about it public. I mean, there's so many facets to all of this. There's so many different types of experimentation that is going on. But have you found someone that is more, that you feel is very similar to your experiences?
Yeah, I think, I mean, I've talked to a handful of other people who have been victimized with this stuff, and yeah, it's all similar. It's, I think the specifics in regards to the, what I'll call the mind game But for the most part, yeah, it's similar in a general fashion.
How about your?
No, go ahead.
Okay, yeah, I just wanted to ask you also about your parents, and then this might be, you know, in case you don't want to talk about it, that's okay, but I did want to ask you about it, because you also mentioned that, you know, you were at some point, you were hospitalized, and you were, I guess, in and out of a mental hospital to get some psychiatric help, but your parents were involved in because you mentioned that actually that the police came and pick you up at one time, or maybe this even happened more times. But what,
yeah,
kind of the afterwards? What's your impression about your parents? Did you feel that they were helping you during this time, or I mean, why the heck were the police involved? Couldn't the parents, you know, drive you down there, or you know, what's your thought on that?
The first time, I think they did drive. I mean, with my parents, I don't think that, you know, they had any idea what was going on. You know, this is just something that's out of the blue. You know, it's something they never dealt with before.
Mm-hmm.
I think they were just trying to help me. It's just like, you know, anything that goes on in society, if you're just looking at the official version of things, you're just getting the official story. You're not seeing behind the veneer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
Of all that. So I think, you know, they were operating a lot of, you know, under that a lot. And just having the lack of knowledge, the ignorance.
Yeah.
So, me, I didn't want to go on to the hospital, because I kept saying to them, I can beat this. Just give me time. I can beat this.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, my mom's in this state of fear. They're afraid of me because I'm sitting up at night.
Mm.
Thinking people are going to come into the house, and you know, I also think that, you know, maybe they've had was getting hit with this stuff as well.
Sure.
You know, not to the extent that I was, but maybe just a little bit to influence them in ways.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, you know, anytime they would go and do that 302 thing, which would, you know, say, oh, the hospital can come and get me, and then I pretty much become their property for as long as they want to keep me until they want to release me.
Mm-hmm.
And the cops would come along because I'm considered a threat.
Huh.
Yeah.
So that's, I guess it's kind of a standard procedure for, you know, when you're, when they call, you know, to get some help for this, either a mental institution or you know, psychiatric help in this case, that there is a common procedure that actually police are involved in bringing the patients in?
Yeah.
Hmm.
Yeah, definitely. If you don't want to volunteer to go in, then I guess you're considered a threat because you're quote-unquote out of your mind.
Mm.
But then again, there was that whole experience with the police. You know, that I talked about last time.
Yeah, right. When you were run that by us again, you were in sitting in the car and the radio. Right. Tell us about it.
No. I was standing out front, and this is when, you know, the ambulance got here and the cops are there, and there's about 6-7, maybe even more cops. They don't got nothing else better to do, so they all come down.
Mm-hmm.
And the radio's going off, which is usually quiet when you're around a cop, except for when there's some need to communicate. And I had that inner, and I'll state again that I was just standing there quietly, you know, just observing everything still, at least physically. There's whatever going on within me. I get that instinct to run, and then this dispatcher comes over the radio saying he's thinking of running, and then a couple of the cops lunge forward. you know, while this is going on. And, you know, also, when a lot of this first started, you know, there were, again, I'm living on a dead-end street. Most of the people who would come down the street would either be someone who lived there or your occasional person who got lost.
Sure.
But when all this stuff was going on, I mean, there was a ton of traffic on this dead-end road. And a lot of these cars, at least the ones I've seen, they were pretty strange. They had tinted windows throughout the whole thing. Strange type of lights up the sideboard of the car. You know, to me, they seem like, I guess, the cliche type of Men in Black type of car.
Mm-hmm, really?
You know, some type of government, a secret agency, some kind of car that they would use.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's what it seemed to me.
Scary,
but, and I mean, years later, a couple of years back, I went up and to talk to the cops about this. You know, I tried to find out what kind of non-lethal weapons that they had in their arsenal, because I know in 1994, I came across an article somewhere, I don't know if it was mentioned in a book or it was something I pulled off the internet somewhere, but I mean, these weapons, at least non-lethal weapons in 1994, were given, you know, to a lot of police departments throughout America.
Mm-hmm. Really?
And that was the year it started for me.
Huh.
And I went up there to talk to him, and I wanted to go talk to the police chief, but he didn't want to talk to me.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason I wanted to go talk to him is because I wanted to get, you know, a list of all the cops who worked in the Conshohocken Police Department throughout the years while this was happening to me. What I wanted to do was find that, were there any cops that came in to the police department shortly before this happened to me, you know, each time throughout the successive years, and then maybe left afterwards.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, he deflected me to talk to a couple of the officers, so I sat down in a room with them, and I started, and these were some of the cops that were coming to the house to get me.
Mm-hmm. Oh, really? Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I'm sitting down with them, I'm talking to them, you know, I want to know what kind of weapons you have up here. I was like, I suspect something else was going on here, and I started to talk about these weapon systems with them, what they can do, and what they're capable of, and I said, you know, I know I'm not a schizophrenic or bipolar or any of this stuff that they're trying to tell me that I am. And I'm up here to find out if something, you know, if this police department was involved in. And I told them the whole scenario. I said, I'll remember what happened that day. And just, you know, the scenario I just told you, being out front, the instinct to run and all. And, you know, they were just trying to dance around the bush with me. Say, oh, you were all out of your mind. I mean, you were strong as anything. And, you know, then there was a couple of times it took, like, you know, 5-6 cops to get me out of the house.
Really?
Yeah, well, when I was getting hit with this stuff, I'd get very strong, and something that I would call physically intelligent, almost like a cheetah. You know, an animal of that nature has a physical intelligence. I would get this sort of, almost like this animalistic kind of physical intelligence that I would have.
Wow.
So I'm talking to them about this, and they're just trying to deflect it all back to me and make it seem like I was having some type of problem. But I said to them, I said, well, look, the reason I'm coming up here is I want to know if there are any officers that came into this police department during these times that this was going on. I said, because, you know, you could have somebody from the CIA or some other Secret Service or the NSA come in here posing as a police officer, come in here with these weapons and run this stuff. And I told him, you know, I don't think the whole, you know, it might not be that the whole department's involved here and everything.
Sure, yeah.
And I said to him that, you know, you could get someone coming in here running some type of operation that you don't even know about, and they're subverting your jurisdiction.
Mm-hmm.
So when I started to bring this idea out to him, their whole tune changed.
Mm-hmm.
And they started to be a little bit nicer to me, you know, said a few kind of words. And it was almost like maybe I reminded them of something.
Mm, yeah.
And then, the conversation soon ended, and they even, the one guy told me, good luck in what you're doing and all this other stuff.
Okay, yeah.
But, I just find that kind of, the way that they acted with me when I mentioned that to
them. Yeah. Listen, did you have a, if you say like this, did the police, or were they aware of you? Meaning, did you have a, past record, so to speak, or being in contact with the police, so they, potentially could, know you since before?
Yeah, I would say they knew me from before, just growing up and, getting into mischief and lighting off fireworks, which are illegal in town, and getting caught by the cops.
Mm-hmm. So they did know you, at least, since before?
At least I was known by some of the older guys in the apartment. Some of these other guys who I talked to were younger. There's a lot of young guys in the in the police department.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the reason I'm asking, of course, is just to it's interesting to see if they, because I've heard in some cases that they track people from an early age, to try to, they profile you or whatever, and try to keep an eye on you, and then after a few years they might begin, as you say, some kind of, experimentation with specific chosen kids, and these might be kids that they pick up from previous records or whatever, so that's an interesting just point to try to get across there.
Well, yeah, when I was younger in high school and everything, I was an outspoken person. I don't know why they did this to me. Like I said, I have my ideas, but I'm not them.
Mm-hmm.
But, during high school, I was an outspoken person. I used to stand up in class and challenge the teachers on things, especially when they would overstep their authority and start either giving me trouble, or if they gave one of my classmates trouble, I would stand up and defend them.
Mm-hmm.
Because of that, I'll get kicked out of class a lot.
Mm, that stands out,
Yeah.
It does.
I'm sure it does if they're looking over the records, which I suspect they are. I mean, I've read in some places that they have, records on everybody, and it's easy for them just to get the school records and say,
sure.
Okay, where's the peg that's sticking up?
Exactly, yeah. Yeah, that's very interesting. How's your, do you have a good relationship with your parents today? How's that going?
Yeah, the relationship, it's just like any other, relationship that most people have with their parents. They've done a lot. I'd have to say that I wouldn't be where I'm at right now if it wasn't for them, because they gave me a lot of material support that I needed to bring myself out of this.
That's good.
Being able to just to live at the house and all, and
yeah,
to not have really the pressure to go out and get a job and all this other stuff when I needed to kind of sit home and heal.
Sure.
And work through a lot of things, do the research. But
that's very good.
I mean, they certainly don't understand me. I'm kind of like the black sheep in my family.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Or the outsider.
Yeah, yeah.
Michael Desarian talks about the outsider. That's
indeed.
That pretty much explains the way I've been my whole life.
Mm-hmm, yeah. It's good to hear that things are, good to hear that you speak to them at least, so nothing did go wrong in that sense. But, one thing I also wanted to return to was to talk a little bit about the experience that you had at the mental hospital. We didn't talk too much about that last time, only that, I think that you said that you didn't have a very pleasant experience there and was strange overall, but were there any kind of, doctors around that you could talk to, meaning psychologists or psychiatrists? Did you have, like, sessions with them, or how was your experience there?
I guess it all depended on which hospital I was in. I was in a number of them. I was in called Building 50, which is on the grounds of the Norristown State Hospital, but for some reason they're not connected. It's When I was in there, there really wasn't, you know, you maybe see somebody once in a while, but for the most part, you're kind of locked in like this concrete type of prison.
Mm-hmm.
And they had their nurses station and all that, and they would dish out their pills. And if you didn't want to take the pills, then they got a, you know, these men nurses to come and, you know, maybe four or five of them to take you into a room, hold you down, and then shoot you with a needle.
Oh, really? Sheesh.
Yeah, I've had that done to me a handful of times.
Mm-hmm.
Wasn't another one that was up in a town called Roxborough. I guess it's like a section of the city on the outer portions of Philadelphia. And in there they had a lot of like AA groups and stuff like that. So I don't, and that was pretty, you know, my memories are kind of a little vague about that period.
Sure.
They had another hospital called Northwestern.
Mm-hmm.
And there was one doctor in there who would talk to me. His name was Dr. Shamsie, and I called him Dr. Come Shammy. Because it was very strange. The first time, or one of the times when they put me in there, he came to talk to me.
Mm-hmm.
And I refused to take the pills up to this point. So I was still had, you know, my mental faculties about me, but there were still things going on, so I was kind of still out in this type of, I guess, a smoky type of place where they would get you with hitting you with the weapons.
Mm-hmm.
And he came up and just tried to talk all this jargon on me, the psychological jargon, and every time he did, I would refute it.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know what was going on, but I guess he thought out loud, because he didn't like what I was doing to him. He's like, you know, this guy's too smart for me, he said.
Hmm.
And then he just walked away from me in like this kind of daze.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't see him again until after they started to get me on pills.
Okay. Hmm.
And then I'm in this zombie state, and my mind's not working, so, you know, and then he just, but the bottom line is with all those people, they don't have any help, because number one, they don't know what's going on.
Yeah.
They don't know that these weapons exist, or they're involved.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. Was it very crowded? You know, were there a lot of patients at these places, or were they, like, you know, very quiet, you know?
Yeah, I mean, there's been times there was less patients there than others. I mean, but yeah, there's a lot of guys there. Some people definitely had some, I guess, some drug problems and stuff like that. But then again, if, you know, it's easy to take someone who does have a drug problem and then use them as an experiment, because then I guess it can remove the person who's behind it even further.
Mm-hmm.
Because then they can always, there's always that scapegoat of that person's a drug addict.
Yeah.
But yeah, there were some guys in there, I mean, who had their teeth missing, and I mean, that there are some people in some real bad shape.
Yeah. Yeah, I can imagine. Hey, did you, you know, there's some instances, there's cases where people that have been, you know, suffering from, I mean, we could look at, for instance, at, you know, the kids at Columbine, or I think even the recent one at Virginia Tech, that they had a history of taking, you know, SSRI type drugs, you know, Prozac or Ritalin or whatever it might be. Did you ever take anything like that before, you know, you had your experiences?
No. Never touched any of those pills. Never any Ritalin or anything. I mean,
that's good.
Yeah, nothing whatsoever.
Yeah, that's good. Yeah, because the potential there seems to be, or there seems to be some kind of connection there, in some cases at least, that they're, you know, the kids, you know, they become totally knocked out by these pills, and then, you know, adding the rest to that, you know, they they can create these, again, these kind of Manchurian candidate type personalities, I guess, but that's good to hear that you don't have a history with those kind of pills. That's great.
Well, I mean, after they started to get me into the hospitals, then they started to dish out the pills on me.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
And when I was in there, it was either take them or not. And if I didn't take them, then they were going to, like I said, take me into a room, shoot me up with whatever they wanted to give me. So, you know, I kind of had to play their game to get out of the place. But once I got out, I would, you know, I'd stop taking the pills.
Okay, yeah.
And a lot of times I got a lot of pressure from my mother. She'd get all upset, no, you have to take your pills, you have a problem. And I would try and talk to her about things. And, you know, it's like trying to get through to somebody, like telling them, you know, 9/11 was an inside job or an Illuminati job, and they just keep going by that official line. They don't want to look at things. They don't want to consider stuff. But, you know, I didn't listen to her. I would stop taking the pills, and then again, it would happen again, and so the whole process would happen. It was six times. The last time that they zapped me, I decided to do a little, switch some things around as far as, you know, I was trying to fight it, and I got better at you know, living underneath this type of attack each time it happened.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, it's just like anything. You get more familiar with what's happening, and then you start, you know, finding ways to deal with it.
Yeah.
And the last time I was hit was in 2002. It was around, I guess it was March of 2002, March, April, sometime around there.
Mm-hmm.
And I put up a good fight with them that time. I didn't let them get me all aggravated and you know, really upset emotional, because they play on my emotions and
mm-hmm.
get, you know, get in these kind of states.
At this point, had you began reading about other kinds of experimentation going on, mind control, EMF weaponry and such? Did you kind of were familiar with it by then, or?
I was getting hints of things. You know, like after 9/11 happened, my sister had a computer, so I'd go over her house, and I'd go over there and find stuff and print all this stuff off. So I read a lot about 9/11.
Mm-hmm.
Found things about Skull and Bones at this point. There was one writing about something called the Psycho-Civilization of Society. I think that was I forget who wrote that. But yeah, that was one of these, you know, documents that started to come around that started to make me think that maybe something else is going on. Because the longest time, I thought that I was being attacked by demons.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And then as I got more information, I was kind of on the fence. Well, this is either some type of spiritual attack, or I got hit with, you know, I was getting hit with these weapons.
Mm-hmm.
And it's hard to kind of explain, but it's, you know, going through all this, it's kind of like traveling through these mental states where you're kind of on a mountain at times, and then you're down into a dark valley.
Mm-hmm.
And each mental state has kind of like a different, you know, sort of energetic configuration. So where, when I'm in one state of mind, there's a whole new set, or not a new set, but a certain set of experiences.
Mm-hmm.
And then when you're in a different state of mind, or I'm in a different state of mind, there's a different energetic configuration, so you have access to different memories and things like that.
Hmm.
So the first time, you know, when I said I went through this, I got, you know, I was saying the government's behind that. Eventually, I forgot that because I was zombified the first time.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And it was just an intuition. So it's kind of like going through these, it's kind of weaving through all these different mental states, being in a normal mental state, bringing myself back up, getting zapped, going through that mental state, going into the hospital, being pulled up,
mm-hmm.
and then going down into this sort of shut down state and then trying to work back out of that.
Mm-hmm.
So there was is almost like a rubber band. It's very elastic, and at least from my experiences. But that the last time that it hit me, I was able to kind of maintain myself throughout. I was still, getting hit hard.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they're really hit me with a lot of voices. I was trying to make sure I got to sleep every night. I was trying to keep myself calm, make sure I ate. And then it got to a point where I decided, okay, I kept telling my mom, don't call the hospital. She's in her state of fear and worried about things.
Mm-hmm.
But I made a decision that I'll sign myself into the hospital, because if I sign myself into the hospital, then I can sign myself out in 72 hours.
Oh, really? Oh.
And then, if I sign myself in, they can't force any pills on me.
Okay, that's much better. Better to do it that way then,
Yeah.
Yeah.
So the last time it happened, I was real reluctant to do it. I mean, driving out there, I was ready to tell him, well, just turn around. Take me back, because I didn't like the place.
And I guess that this was also to help calm your parents down at that point, if you signed yourself into the hospital, I guess?
Yeah, help calm them down. Maybe it would make these people who are doing this to me think, okay, we got them now.
Yeah. Hmm.
But I went in there, stayed my 3 days, and got out.
Mm.
I couldn't sleep one night. So I asked them for a pill, to help me to sleep. I think they gave me what they were trying to give me, whatever the doctor prescribed. And that pill made my tongue swell.
Oh, really?
There were a couple experiences being in these hospitals where I would have to say it was on my record. They knew that I was allergic to whatever they were giving me.
Mm-hmm.
And this one pill they gave me made my tongue swell, but at that point I knew how to handle it. Either getting ice when I was in the hospital, I couldn't get ice, so I just took my toothbrush and held my tongue down and just kind of waited for it to pass. And, but there was another time when I was in that building 50, one of the times during the might have been 1997, that time when it happened. They gave me a pill that they knew that I was allergic to.
Mm-hmm.
And my tongue swollen, and I couldn't breathe. I'm literally choking here.
Oof.
And so I run up to the nurse's station. They had this one guy working there. He kind of reminded me like a Charles Manson type of guy.
Okay.
Kind of how he looked. It was kind of real thin, looked like he was undernourished.
Mm-hmm.
I walk up to him like, I can't breathe, I can't breathe, help me here. And he's just looking at me with this dead stare.
Mm.
And then I'm down on the floor kind of choking. And I remember this nurse walking down the hall at the time, and she just, I look up at her asking her for help. She just kind of gave me this look, and I mean, if looks could kill, she would have killed me right there.
Oof, okay.
So just, that makes me wonder, what's going on with these people?
Yeah, indeed.
At this place.
My God.
I've listened to my heart, my intuition, which is basically what brought me out of all this.
Yeah.
Just keep following that, but at the time I had a strong kind of inner feeling to put myself in a certain position.
Mm-hmm.
And at the time I was thinking maybe it was doing something energetically with the energy flow of my body, and it kind of like stabilized myself.
Mm-hmm.
And I put my head to the ground. It's like grounded myself out.
Yeah.
Just kind of thinking.
Like when you moved like from your house to the hospital in those cases, were there any difference? I guess I'm trying to ask you here if you could. Do you think that it would have been possible for you to kind of run away from your house, and then the experience would actually diminish, or was it like once they zapped you with these with the weaponry, that was it? It just needed like a very short period, and then it was self perpetuating, meaning that you did that this was something that was ongoing in your mind, so at that point it didn't matter where you were.
No, they had to keep spinning it, meaning that, you know, once they get the ball rolling, did you ever see like some of the African kids in third world countries or in Jamaica, they have that little kind of like circular wheel thing and they have the stick and they hit it?
Yeah, sure, I've seen that, yeah.
And they keep moving it?
Yeah.
You know, with the stick, that's kind of like what they do. Once they get you moving, they got to kind of keep hitting you with the stick and keep you rolling.
And you could be, it doesn't matter if you move or if you run away, or like, did you ever try to run out from the house or something like that, and it that helped?
No, it didn't, which tells me it wasn't so much of a local, you know, like there was someone hiding out in some of the houses around where I was living, just hit me with handheld devices. I mean, there was times I'd get in the car and I'd drive out, you know, in the area, and I was still getting hit when I'm driving around in the car.
So this, again, we talked about that last time too, of course, that this might be a much, you know, bigger, this is something that strikes an entire area, and a lot of people in this area might have reacted in a similar way or having similar experiences as you did.
Yeah, it's quite possible that something like that was going on. Because of the state of mind I was in, I wasn't sure if that was happening, but remembering things, definitely, I would have to say the town that I was living in got strange. But that could just been the state of perceptions, you know, state of mind that they had me in while hitting me with these things.
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
Because they can, like, you know, they pick up on your, on someone's biological frequency that we emanate, that bioprint that we put off, and then they can just track that.
Yeah.
You know, so they'll just hit one person, or they can, I guess, hit as many people as they want individually,
yeah,
or, you know, as a group. I think if they were going to hit 10 people in a group and hit each one with an individual type of program, they would either have to have some kind of supercomputer program to do that with certain inputs that it would follow for each individual, or they would have to have someone on the other end operating some type of computer system that plugged into these systems for each individual.
Yeah.
But, you know, I'm not sure. But yeah, there was one time before it even started for me in 2002, one time, I made plans with a friend of mine. We were going to run down to the Shenandoah Mountains and hang out and then spin back around and come up the East Coast through Virginia Beach, stop off at that Edgar Casey research place, and then come home. And so this started up before, you know, the date we were supposed to go. I kind of packed my car, and drove out to his place. And yeah, I mean, they were hitting me the whole way up to his place. It took, you know, it's about a 45-minute ride. He lived out around Westchester at the time. Got into the car. We were going around picking up stuff, and they were zapping me the whole way with voices. And everything, and
yeah.
We got back to his house after doing some shopping. I just said, you know what, I can't even go.
Shish.
With the pressure they were putting down on me.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a strange thing I seen while driving up there, which brings back to, which comes to mind for me. I still don't know what to think about it, whether it was some type of an illusion that they projected, or that getting hit with this stuff maybe opened up something in my eyes visually to maybe see beyond, you know, this third dimension that we're in.
Because
when I was driving up to his place on a 202, there was this kind of like vacuum cleaner sound that I was hearing. And it was very similar, kind of like a hum, heavy industrial vacuum cleaner type sound, very similar to what happened in the bookstore when they were trying to wind me up again, when I was starting to get my hands on some of this information about all this stuff. And I look up in the sky, and there's a strange type of spacecraft that materializes out of nowhere, and then it kind of disappeared again. And when I seen them, when they would materialize, they were actually hovering right over top of the freeway. And I don't know what to make of that. You know.
Wow. So, can you describe the spacecraft beyond that? Was it like, was it a classic UFO, or what was this?
No, it wasn't like the classic UFO. It was like this block type of a ship, but it wasn't. It was designed kind of in a block fashion. I guess the best way to describe it was in the Star Wars film. You know, the older ones.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Episode 4, 5, and 6.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they had those one ships that had the prongs going out the back, and then that front kind of cockpit area.
Mm-hmm. I think it was. I think I know what you mean, but I might be off. Okay. Were these the Empire ships, their ships, or?
No. It was one of the Rebel ships.
Ah. Okay. Okay. Yeah. Okay.
It wasn't the X-wing or something else, but it was the one that kind of had those two prongs that were coming out the back.
Mm. Okay, yeah.
It was shaped just like that as far as the, you know, the overall shape of it, but it was blockish all
okay.
along like that.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Strange.
Yeah.
Well, do you know how big estimate? Very difficult, of course, to estimate how big it is, but if you would guess.
I'd have to say it was maybe, you know, 50 to 75 feet long.
Mm-hmm.
I guess it was landed on the ground, maybe 10 feet high. Maybe not even, I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Hmm. Wow. So, this is a very interesting area because, you know, there are a lot of, you know, people talking about the UFO phenomena and the connection, you know, with, you know, military experimentation, and not only that the military experimented with aircraft, of course, but that they're experimenting with people and are projecting, as you said, visual illusions into people's, you know, retina or whatever. But this is what, you know, afterwards, you've thought about it on and off. Do you have any conclusions about it beyond, you know, what do you think it might have been?
Yeah, either, like I said, it was an illusion, or with what they're hitting me with, it opened up my visual frequency to maybe see a little bit beyond this third dimension.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I was seeing something dimensional.
Yeah.
Which would explain why it was kind of fading in and out. It was like, you know, appearing and then disappearing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I guess if you ever seen that sci-fi show Sliders.
No, I haven't.
Yeah, well, there's this whole sci-fi show where, you know, these guys found a way to get into different dimensions. And, you know, there were these aliens in some of the worlds and, you know, they would come out of these different dimensions into another one. It was very similar to that, but I don't.
Wow.
I still don't know how to place it. You know, I'm not going to say that, you know, it was aliens behind what I was going through.
Sure, sure.
You know, I pretty much think it's the government, the secret organizations and all that.
Sure.
But at the same time, you know, I certainly, there's enough evidence to say that there are aliens involved in this whole overall picture of what pertains to this new world order.
Yeah.
Or the new world order of the ages. New order of the ages, as it said.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, from my research and listening to other researchers, I'd have to say that at the top of this, it's aliens that's running the show.
Really?
Yeah, that's, you know, that's what I would have to say.
That's interesting. So they're, yeah, because other researchers have made this, you know, correlation even between, you know, mind control and the UFO phenomena, but it seems to be,
right.
just as you explained it, actually, it seemed to be that it's kind of, you know, going back and forth between those two areas, like either it is something real, as it were, going on, or this is something that is being projected into people, And many people have tied it together with, you know, Project Bluebeam and what have you. You know, there are so many different projects out there, from, you know, fake alien invasion to that there actually is an alien, you know, invasion going on, but not as we might perceive it, you know. That's very interesting.
Some of the things that could be going on, I know there's some researchers out there who are writing and saying that the actual whole alien thing is actually just a mind control project to make aliens seem real.
Yeah, exactly.
Now, what I think is going on here with the whole alien thing is that they're protecting some jewel within this whole subject.
Mm-hmm.
And if you want to protect something, you know, you want to throw up a smokescreen around it. So that's what I think is happening with this whole alien thing, is that there's a lot of misinformation and disinformation out there because they're trying to protect something.
Yeah.
I think there's definitely some type of alien involvement in the whole greater picture of things. You know, who knows? They might be involved in some of the mind control stuff, and then
sure.
You know, there's a whole mix of stuff, and then there could be people who are getting hit with the mind control weapons, and they're trying to make them think that they're getting abducted by aliens when, you know, you just got some government agent.
Yeah. And then you have even the...
Go ahead.
You have even a third variation on that, and that is the... And that's a very interesting one. It's like that there are people that actually are abducted by aliens, but then the government comes in and actually does their own version of the abduction on these people to actually be able to track them down in order to try to figure out what's special about them and actually what the aliens have been doing with the people that have been abducted.
there's so many possibilities in what they're doing, and then, you know, it's hard to kind of decipher what's what sometimes.
It is, and I mean, we don't have the all you know, all available information. This is kind of a you know, we're trying to figure it out as we go along here, almost, you know. We're trying to, there's so many researchers out there, and I think that we are a lot of, you know, there's new information becoming available, you know, all the time, and then that's an important aspect, I think, to you know, keep an open mind to all possibilities in order to actually trying to figure out what is going on and not block yourself, because you just because you involve aliens in it doesn't mean that that is not the case, you know. But many people unfortunately set the foot down there and refuse to go any further as soon as, you know, UFOs or aliens are involved, you know.
Yeah, I mean, if we can't keep our minds open about all the different possibilities, then if we lock our minds down on one area on a certain peripheral and say, well, we're not going beyond that because that means this, and they throw some kind of generalization over, well, all the alien stuff is disinfo, then if something is going on in that area that's actually happening, you're not going to see it.
Yeah, that's right.
And it's dangerous. It's dangerous. We have to have a completely open mind here when it comes to this information and consider all the facets to it. We're never going to figure it out.
That's right. That's right. And
go ahead.
Yeah, and I just wanted to say that if there is such a thing as, you know, as we talked about, that there is actually is a form of invasion, or there is some kind of involvement from, you know, an extraterrestrial or even interdimensional race or whatever, the only way to actually be able to either protect yourself from it or be able to, you know, whatever, get in contact and order to do something about it, you actually have to first recognize that there is a possibility for that taking place. That doesn't mean, as just as you said, you know, that you want to rule out the other side too, you know. But again, I totally agree with you. That's the main idea here, to keep an open eye and an open mind. And as you said, I think it's dangerous when we actually close down all the possibilities, you know.
Yeah, exactly, and that's, you know, that's one reason when you asked me, you know, earlier on the last show, that, you know, do I think that they're still hitting me? And I don't know. I'm not going to say, you know, I beat this thing and I'm through it now, because you know what? There might be something else going on that maybe I'm just not aware of.
That's right. That's right.
And if I don't keep an open mind to that, then I'll never catch them.
That's right.
Yeah.
We will continue talking with AJ Bruno in the subscriber section. We'll begin talking about the hum that AJ started to pick up on after 2001, and then we'll get into some very interesting and good points about the New World Order, where we are heading and what we can do, what are good solutions and what are less good solutions. Very good stuff with AJ Bruno coming up for all you subscribers. For now, this is Henrik Palmgren. Thank you so much for tuning in. Until next time, take good care.
Who are we? Where do we come from? And where are we going?
Welcome.
Welcome.
This is Red Eyes Radio.
This is Red Eyes Radio.